The views expressed on this show by guests and the hosts on issues outside of the 9/11 controlled demolition evidence are the opinions of those individuals alone and do not necessarily reflect those of architects and engineers for 9/11 truth.
Welcome back to 9/11 Freefall. I'm the host, Andy Steele. Today we're joined by Blair Allen Gatsby. He's a graduate of the University of Toronto and currently teaches religious studies in the Maricopa County Community College District in Arizona. He has been researching the East African coast since the 1980s when he first witnessed the multi-religious civic harmony that has been achieved in a dominantly Islamic region. He conducted a 17-day hunger strike in 2008, requesting that then-Arizona Senator and presidential candidate John McCain watch World Trade Center 7 come down and reevaluate his foreword to the popular mechanics smear of 9/11 truth. We had him on back then to talk about that. That was really great work, too, because John McCain really had it coming, in my view. And we hit him at all angles, many activists. And he's got a new book out. He's going to be talking about that today. So, Blair, welcome to 9/11 Freefall.
Thank you, Andy. Very good to be here with you again after, as you mentioned, a dozen years.
Exactly. So let's just get started because we want to talk about this book, and I think it's a very interesting topic and a very interesting angle with which to look at the 9/11 truth issue. And we're going to be focusing a lot on that chapter of the book, because this is a 9/11 focused show, but you cover a lot of different historical events in this, and it's related to religion. So please tell our audience the title of the book and what is the thesis.
Okay, it's called Religious Delusions, American Style, Manipulations of the Public's Mind. And September the 11th constitutes Chapter 8, though it kind of opens up the book. It's how I was made aware. You could say it was the keyhole through which I first peeked into a room to see that there have been a series of situations or historical events that have taken place in American history, and it's not unique to America. These are patterns that have existed before, in which religion is used by the political elites or the government itself in order to engineer social policy, manage civil society. And let's think, for example, in the case of 9/11, since this is the topic you're audience would be most familiar with, is Muslims were blamed for this. Now, we know this is impossible. They could not have achieved what Richard clearly states out, and that's where my connection to AE 9/11 Truth comes in. Is I've had a quite a long friendship with Richard Gage. When he first began doing his what's today his 2008 presentation that he's since expanded on, that's when I was doing a hunger strike, as Andy mentioned, in John McCain's office here in Phoenix. So staying focused upon this, each of us bringing our specialty, if you will, to the table and focusing on, in Richard's case, upon the building's collapse, and in my case, religious studies. Muslims were blamed for this. And since we know this is not the case, this has social consequences, and I think it's pretty much a matter of the historical record at this point, what the political capital was that was gained out of 9/11. But looking back in time, there are a number of episodes where religion has been similarly really blamed for some event or some situation. And I think probably the best way to take it is to just, I can skirt through it chapter by chapter. I said 9/11 is the eighth chapter. And I use a certain kind of teaching methodology where the last two chapters, this one in the Waco, which is chapter 7, the Branch Davidians held up in Texas there in 1993, that in each of those cases, the Waco Branch Davidian situation and 9/11, one resource, I'm doing this for a reason too, because it's very painful to see the field of religious studies devolve this way and to be used this way to promote their lies. We know them to be lies. Muslims had nothing to do with this terror attack. Yet my whole field of religious studies has been basically serving as, the word is a flack, right? Like a press conference, a press agent, just going to bat for these stories and just advertising these stories and promoting them and bringing their own specialties to bear on them. And these, as we know, are false. Okay, so the idea here is that chapters 7 and 8, 8 being on September the 11th, and chapter 7 on the Waco Branch Davidian fiasco in which the ATF, FBI stormed the compound. In both of those cases, religion was blamed for the cause of the events, but it was really government action in both of those cases. And it only takes one documentary in the case of the Waco, it's called Evidence of the Waco, the Rules of Engagement. And it was a 1997 documentary, and there was a FLIR, a forward-looking infrared drone flying over the compound, and they clearly shows the storming using military-style means against those people there. And whatever you think of David Koresh, this is not a defense of him, but whatever you think of him, 80 people were killed as a result of the over-aggressive use of force by the government. And, of course, we know 9/11.
One of the things that I want to clarify, too, because you say this right in the introduction, is that this is not an attempt to condemn people of faith or a condemnation of religion itself or anyone's beliefs, but you're just looking at how this has been perverted to try to push certain people's agendas in our society.
Oh, yes, and this comes down from the top. Andy, I'm a professor of religious studies. I'm extremely sympathetic towards religion. I served in missions overseas in Africa. That's why I go back there today to study and write about, the Islam that I was acquainted with back in the 1980s when I lived there is the same people that live there today. There was never any problem. And I was there as a Christian missionary. We were quite open about our intentions, and there was never any conflict. That was one little red flag for me, from my personal perspective on 9/11, was, well, hey, wait a minute, I know Muslims, they don't have these ideas, where's this coming from? Okay, so no, by far and away, in fact, the underlying thesis of this book and the main argument of this book is, in fact, a defense of religion. I'm pushing back, I believe, against the government's abuse of our religious beliefs, taking our religious beliefs and then using them against us to manipulate us and to get us to go along with this or that political goal. I mean, for example, we all understand the idea of the Elmer Gantry character, right? The religious swindler, the guy, the preacher who flies around in a private jet while he's bilking money from. We all understand the misuse of religion by religious people or people with religious, the connections, and then they kind of prey upon them. But then there's also the external use, and what I'm seeing as the abuse of religion by government officials. Maybe think of it this way. In Rome, Nero setting fire back in the days of the early Christians and then blaming them for it so he can persecute them. That's kind of a nice, tidy example to think about this kind of thing. So no, far be it from criticizing people's religious beliefs. In fact, I'm defending them from their misuse.
Absolutely. Now let's zero in on chapter 8 here. It's titled, Islam Comes to the Homeland on a Tuesday, September 11, 2001. Talk about how your overall thesis in the book applies to the September 11th event.
I tried to get, remember, it's called Religious Delusions. The title is a little ironic, right? The delusion is, and I open up each chapter with something of an overview of the delusion, and then with something of a correction just on the first page, just to give the reader a sense of where it's going. But the idea that Islam being responsible for the jihad, and here's an example of the field's attempt to squash anything related to 9/11 truth and to look at information such that Richard presents. I'm just working from the assumption, right? I mean, clearly these buildings, they've come down in a manner that two airplanes, I've often phrased it this way, Andy, you cannot take three buildings, knock straight down three buildings with two airplanes. In a very simple way to put it, it kind of makes sense, right? Oh, this is not something that can physically happen, but yet we were being asked to believe this. So I tried in one of my academic journals to get a paper published in which I was just calling into question the motives of the hijackers. Look, Muhammad Atta and these characters, who were they? Could they have had non-religious motives for getting on those planes. They were known to have, you know, could be cavorting with prostitutes and drinking and using pornography, and numerous of these hijackers, this was revealed about them after the fact. But we were told, no, it's all right. In no way. It would just not be touched. The academic world cannot touch the 9/11 truth information. And I'm just working with the premise now in this book, and that it cannot be, Islam cannot be directly connected to this attack.
Now, I've got a quote, and it might be a little long, but I thought it was very good. This was actually a paragraph in this chapter. I'm going to try to read it here. It says, "It is very natural and organic law that is selected and manipulated by the political elites in order to guide public opinion and the war effort that is afoot. When this manipulation includes religion, the stakes can be even higher. E.R. Dodds reminded us of that within Greek history, those much-esteemed founders of our own heritage." And here's what E.R. Dodds said. "To offend the gods by doubting their existence or by calling the sun a stone was risky enough in peacetime, but in war it was practically treason. It amounted to helping the enemy. That, I think, is part of the explanation. Superstitious terror based on the solidarity of the city-state. I should like to believe that it was the whole explanation, but it would be dishonest not to recognize that the new rationalism carried with it real as well as imaginary dangers for the social order." Talk about your thoughts on that quote.
Yeah, when you start questioning the basis of, so calling into question the 9/11 a story, you actually begin to pull out the pillars to people who disagree with you. You're putting the rug out from under their feet, and they're aware of that. You're going to undermine the entire social order. Look at the political capital that was obtained out of that attack. My goodness, we got two wars. We're still really paying a price for this. It's not ended as of now. So no, you challenge those myths. And he says the gods, right? And I think what I'm arguing also in that chapter is our current American political situation is very similar to a cult, to a religious cult, where you criticize what our leaders are telling you, and it's like criticizing the gods in ancient Greece. And you're a threat to the entire social order. Hence the reactions we've received from people. I know you've had and encountered or at least seen clips of people really violently reacting to when being exposed to 9/11 truth. I would never, for example, just drop this topic into a classroom. Even though I would feel completely justified, I would never do it. I don't know. And for this reason alone, Andrew, it would be, what if I've got a student out there who's maybe been traumatized by all this stuff, lost a loved one, lost a leg, blah, blah, whatever, maybe lost a loved one when young, and then this it gets thrown at them? It would be traumatic. You could trigger somebody. To talk about that in that conclusion there about Frank Roque, the fellow that went on a shooting spree on September 13th, 2 days after 9/11, he says, "I'm going to get me a towel head." And he shot a Sikh man, not even a Muslim. Not that that would change his terrible behavior, but the idea is that people respond and react to these types of, especially fear. And we were all traumatized after 9/11. This is 2 days after 9/11, on September 13th when this happens. This is out here in East Mesa. It's Frank Roque, an Italian-American, just went out and killed this man. Shot him in the back. Good grief. This guy had a turban on. He was a Sikh Indian, and he was just mistaken. That was particularly painful for somebody, a religious studies teacher. I was a new teacher at that time. And that incident kind of traumatized me a little bit. What? And I'm a Canadian originally. What? Is that how we react down here in the United States to these kinds of things? We go shooting at each other? Holy crow. It was kind of frightening. The very foundations of society can become shaken with these types of big lies, very similar to religious ideas.
Yeah, and this is just a perfect example of how lies, and in this case a very big one, regarding, well, how the towers came down, and then that puts into question, when you actually learn the truth of it, it puts into question who actually did it and whether these guys could have been involved in setting explosives in the buildings, or if someone more advanced or an entity more advanced had to be involved. But when you have this lie out there, you're going to trigger mentally ill people or very dumb people to go do certain things, and then some poor guy working in his garden, his name was, and I'll probably, I may mispronounce it, but it's Balbir Singh Sodhi, working in his garden just gets killed. So this is one example of how the big lie affected one life that wasn't even near New York City on September 11th. That is why we got to pursue truth at all costs. And that's not to say that this would have been justified even if the official story were correct, obviously.
I often think about the 1994 genocide of the Hutus and the Tutsis in Rwanda, Burundi there, when basically these were two tribes that, though there were some cultural and ethnic differences between them, they had basically were neighbors and cohabitated together for, you know, decades or generations. But when somebody got a hold of some political guy got a hold of the microphone and put fear into society, they were able to get neighbor to turn on neighbor. Now, that's the kind of thing that scares me. And these lies have the potential to do that kind of thing. So, hey, listen, I want to say to you as a 9/11, still an AE 9/11 truth activist, that I was in Mombasa, Kenya, in East Africa this past December, January, and I'm carrying on some research there, as you had read earlier, and I had a questionnaire, and I was asking Muslims in Mombasa, so here we are in East Africa, the other side of the planet, and I was asking them if they had heard about this 9/11 as an inside job, and one fella even mentioned the 47 core columns, and I just tilted my head up and I said, thank you, Richard. Your work's everywhere, brother, because Muslims, who obviously would be more alert to this, being the labeled as the guilty perpetrators, they are very aware in Africa that they have been lied to. And that'll be one of my next books, is trying to understand, and we'll see if an academic press will try it. I'll use the cover of International Political Awareness, but really that'll be code for 9/11 truth awareness out there in the world. Muslims are very aware, I want to go on the record as saying, are very aware in Mombasa, Kenya, that the U.S. government is behind September the 11th, and they've been paying a terrible price in Kenya. That's another story. That's another show, Andy.
Right, well, it's a ripple effect. I mean, one big lie leads to another bad incident and another bad incident because people are basing their decisions on a foundation that isn't true. And so that's why we need to get to the bottom of it. And it's also why this issue is still important, because I don't care that it was almost 20 years ago that this happened. I mean, if we get an acknowledgement of what really happened that day, that will reflect on decisions that get made now, it will reflect on decisions that get made 50 years from now, 100 years from now, when people know that a deceit like this could be pulled off. And again, the immediate aftermath, Muslims were being blamed for it. I mean, they said all of the politically correct stuff from the political offices, oh, don't go out and blame Muslims and all of this, but you know how people are going to react. And who was it that was profiled afterwards? Who was it that we were always seeing streamed up on television or put up on television as likely culprits? Who got set up in stings that in which they were basically entrapped? That's what sort of got me into this issue, was when I saw a particular case where, when I looked at it, I mean, these guys had been pretty much entrapped into being another statistic on how Homeland Security is doing its job. So Muslims definitely had a very negative impact from what happened and from this big lie being put forward. Now, one of the things that's important to do is learn as much as you can about the rest of the world and learn about other people. Even if it's not a kind of culture that you think you yourself personally would fit into very well, I got a big benefit from doing the Peace Corps, being around Islamic culture. Not everyone gets that kind of exposure, depending on where you live in the world, but you would show a particular, I guess it's a sitcom called Little Mosque on the Prairie, and you would show it in your classes each semester. Talk about why you did that.
Yeah, well, that's a nice little example. For whatever reason, Canada felt that it was in its own interest, or the government of Canada, it's CBC produced, that's the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, equivalent to your PBS down here. They thought it was in the interest of the country socially and culturally and hopefully politically to make this sitcom where it's just, well, it's obvious what it's spoofing, right? Little Mosque on the Prairie, small town Canada, Muslims making their way among Canadians. And they're basically the theme of the show. It's a comedy, lighthearted comedy. And it's basically intent on familiar, I would say, as a cultural critic, if you will, that the purpose of the show is to acclimate non-Muslim Canadians to our changing society and give them a presentation in on television of a way that will just familiarize ourselves, non-Muslim Canadians, with Muslims, and to see how they live. I've had students ask me, remember one American student asking me, well, there's a, actually it was a student say, I had a lady say to me, a Muslim student say, I was asked by an American lady, do I ever take this off, meaning her headscarf? Well, in this little show, you see that. A little knowledge can go a big way to dispelling fears. When we see that Muslims have much the same types of lifestyle issues and issues getting along within their communities as the rest of us, it just diffuses the ignorance. And, you know, I think that's where a lot of this comes from, Andy. Like you said, we need to have a little more exposure to the world. America's media is largely to blame. I isolate three areas in society that are responsible for making Americans respond the way they do, and that's obviously our education system. I love that book, Lies My Teacher Told Me. I hope your readers are familiar. That's a good first step to orient you to something like my book, to see how history is so badly distorted in just in high school textbooks, or and then, of course, in our educational systems, the media, and the political spheres. Those three spheres are largely responsible for keeping us. And these are the instruments of the elites. This is how society is run and kept in check. You mean to tell me, Andrew, right now as we're going through this COVID lockdown, as we're speaking, this is underway, that somebody isn't somewhere learning an awful lot about human behavior? How well do we respond to these types of requests to shut down? Who knows the extent that is what's going on out there? We're all cooped up inside our homes.
You know, one thing I would recommend people do, I mean, I do this just out of natural curiosity, but I go and watch films from other countries, and it'll be the most obscure stuff, but I'll find things from Iran, and it'll be maybe even supposed to be a comedy. But you see people living their lives in these films, and it gets you the sense that most people aren't the swarming masses that you see in the streets when there's conflict between the U.S. and Iran. You know, you get this bird's eye view of all these people in the streets protesting. You think, oh my God, everyone's pissed off at the United States right now. But it's not like that. Most people everywhere are just living their lives, dealing with the situation that they find themselves in, and trying to get through each day and finishing it, watching television or doing whatever their favorite activity. And they're not much different from you. There may be some cultural differences, but you can always find somebody in some other country that's very similar to your personality and that you would get along with very well, minus all of this political nonsense that goes on. So definitely be exposed to people, and talk to other people too, because sometimes people in other countries, a quick example, I was in Uzbekistan, the Peace Corps, and we were watching some cop movie, and there's a high-speed chase, and this was totally unrealistic. Cars are flying off the road, and just insanity. And they thought this actually happens in a police chase in the United States. They thought that real police chases involved, you know, pedestrians being flung off bridges, and I said, no, they stopped the cars.
Yeah, media is powerful in shaping people's perceptions. Media is very, very powerful. So what does it say about our system, Andrew, when they won't allow whoever they are, when they won't allow Little Mosque on the Prairie to be aired down here? Of course you can access it if you go search it out, but why isn't it broadcast on our local PBS? Why doesn't somebody in our government say, hey, maybe there's some social value to this? Maybe there's something to be gained by the average citizen by way of civic harmony, religious pluralism, the idea of an inclusive society. Maybe there's something to be gained by our citizens watching this program. No, why did they block it from us? I include a little clip there that in the book that says when it went out, when the series was over, I think it ran for 7 years, and it went into syndication, all kinds of countries picked it up, but America didn't. That to me, that's dysfunction. There's dysfunctional government here in the United States. That chapter 8 is kind of scary. If you read that last chapter, the conclusion, really, the fact that our institutions, Congress, these things are just so neutered, they are useless. All they can agree to do is spend money, nothing else. It's just horrible. It's horrible. And how does a demagogue like Trump come to power? But again, whatever you think about him, pro or con, I was very offended by this anti-Islamic rhetoric. A Muslim ban, right out of the gate, that was a strike against him in my mind. that you could talk like that. That's an unconstitutional way to talk for a high official. You cannot speak in terms of banning a particular religion. I realize we have to quarantine countries where bad guys have come from, but that's a whole other issue. Anyway, Andy, when our religions are used against us, not much good can come out of it, my friend. And that's what my book, I hope, serves as something of a caution against.
Well, what really got me was during the 2008 campaign. We're still in the post-9/11 world and the aftermath, and it was still front and center of political dialogue where you would see these people like Rick Santorum, who are supposedly so devout Christians, be ready to... I mean, I don't think he ever met a war he didn't like. John McCain as well, because they would use the Christian platform to try to reach out to that demographic, but that the advocating isn't really along with the beliefs in the Bible. So to me, it seems almost like a mental condition. And you see this not just with religions, but people who believe in an ideology of some kind, whether right or left. They believe that what you think or what you believe in somehow excuses your own bad agenda or your own bad behavior. And this transcends different issues, different belief systems, and there must be some kind of psychological phenomenon. I don't know if it's been ever studied, but how people will shield themselves in a bigger movement or belief and expect that their behavior is going to be justified because they believe in a particular thing. I believe in peace, so let's go kill a bunch of people so that we can have it. In our last few minutes here now, we've just kind of barely covered this book. There's a whole book to read available for purchase. How can our listeners get their hands on it?
Oh, it's available at all the regular outlets. It's it's published by a typical publisher, a Trinday, so it's available at Amazon or Barnes & Noble or Target for that matter. It's readily available. You can, when we can go back outdoors, you can go to your local bookstore and find it. But ordering it from the publisher is always the best. It's a small publisher, and he tends to publish things that are going to be quarantined by the main New York presses and the academic presses. So the publisher's Trinday, T-R-I-N-E, Day, Trinday Publishers.
Awesome. Well, we're going to provide a link here at 911freefall.com. So, Blair, good luck with the book. Thank you for all your activism over the years, and thank you so much for coming on 911 Freefall today.
Very nice talking with you, Andrew. You have a good day, sir. Stay safe.
This program is on every Thursday night on No Lies Radio at 10 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Pacific, and every other Sunday night on BBS Radio at 8 o'clock Eastern, 5 o'clock Pacific. You can also keep track of the archives by going to 911freefall.com. This is Andy Steele. Say have a great week. Good luck.